and welcome to Weekly Beats, the podcast in which two guys give you their perspective on the week in music. My name is Charlie.
My name is podcast host and entrepreneur Mark.
Oh, you got the entrepreneur thing going for you now?
I run a small business here to sell you new pizza brand pizza holders.
Out of your car? Out of your van?
Yes, out of my pizza van. Nice. I drive around in a pizza van in this pizza land.
And you tell kids about the pizzas and the music.
I'm the pizza man.
Well, today on the show, Pizza Man and I will tell you all about The Official Body, which is the next album from Shopping, post-punk group. There afterward, we'll tell you about the next big hit song from Bruno Mars and Cardi B. That's Finesse. We'll talk about that, of course. And then we've got just loads of stuff we listened to this week, so get ready for a big ol' heap and help your latest music beats and tidbits and everything else you could ever want. So here we are. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Mark.
What's up?
We're a month into the new year. It's officially the end of January. We're looking ahead to February. Mm-hmm. How are things going for you so far? Are they okay?
Yeah, business really booming. Business is taking off. If the pizza's too hot, you need something to hold it with. Go to holdmypizza.com for all your pizza holding needs.
Holdmypizza.com? That wasn't taken?
Well, it was by me just now. Domain.
Okay. What kind of pizza holders are you selling? Are they like leather? Are they cardboard?
They are pure Brazilian leather.
Okay. Like made from Brazilians.
Made from Brazilian kangaroo meat.
Is that a real species? Does that exist?
No. It's just a racist term I use against Brazilians.
Oh, no. You're a terrible person.
I'm burning people alive.
Now we've
got
a scandal.
Benefit.
We're going to get shut down. The lamestream media is going to come by and shut us down.
When you started this podcast, is this what you wanted it to be about?
I mean, it's not far off from this.
Right.
I know I don't have a whole lot to say about Shopping. So
neither do I.
We could just kick around here for a little while before we dive into it.
Okay. How about you? How's your job treating you?
You know what? It's pretty good. I'm not selling pizzas, but hey, maybe if the business starts taking off, I might rise up in competition to you and offer mine for a slightly lower cost.
Creation. You just said I was selling pizzas. Did you hear me before? I'm not selling pizzas.
Yeah, pizza
I'm selling
holders.
Pizza holders.
Okay. Sorry for that. Maybe I'll sell the pizzas then, and you can sell the pizza holders. We'll get a little monopoly going together.
I don't care about pizza.
Okay.
I care about holding pizza.
Okay.
I don't even eat it.
Mark, speaking of things I don't care about, let's talk about The Official Body by Shopping. This is the third album from the post-punk group. They've been around for a minute, just bubbling under the surface, and the question was, will they finally strike the iron? Will they finally blow up with The Official Body? And Mark, before we got on the horn here, you said to me that, you know, it's going to be probably tough to talk about this thing this week because you don't have a whole lot to say. And that certainly makes me feel good because, man, did I spend hours this week trying to find any sort of thread to latch on to that's worth talking about with The Official Body here. It's not that I think it's necessarily bad music. I think it's fine. It's just completely similar, completely flat, and almost impossible for me to engage with just about anything here. I think if you hear one of these songs, you've heard them all. I have almost no way of differentiating one song from the next. The drumming is repetitious and basic and sloppy throughout. I think that's probably intentional, but man, this thing just kind of sat like a rock in my Spotify lists this week. I had to force myself to go back to it on multiple occasions just because I could not find anything here. It was beat, 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 beating my head against a wall. And man, I need your guidance, Mark, because I have no idea what's worth talking about here.
Allow me to shine a light. In this dark hallway.
Shine your pizza holding light.
The pizza holders do not come equipped with a light. This is not a Game Boy Color backlight situation.
That'd be cool if you did, though.
That would be cool.
About innovating in the future. What if you're in a dark place and need to see the pizza? Hey, pizza backlight.
Don't call me that.
Or better yet, pizza worm light.
Yeah.
It's got a little spiral that comes up the side and plugs into that little chargy space.
Yeah, like a Game Boy Color like light.
Exactly. Pizza worm light.
This is what I like to do on a Wednesday night at about 9 p.m. I roll into the Pizza Hut with my leather pizza holder, the backlight equipped. I say, I would like a single slice of pizza. And they tell me, like they always do, we do not sell single slices, but I can get you a personal pan. And I say, of course, I do not want a personal pan. I would like a slice. They give me the slice. I put it in the holder. It's lit from the backlight. The purple translucent backlight shining onto the pizza. I offer it up to them as a gift. And I say, you're welcome yet again. And I don't pay them ever because I don't eat it.
I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
In this crazy world.
In this crazy world full of shopping and other artists. Nothing makes sense.
I don't know. I don't know if I really hit any roadblocks with shopping the way it seems like you might have. So much as like I love old school punk stuff. That's pretty important to my like musical growing up. Post punk is one of my most comfortable spaces. There's something I really like about something a little dancey, a little arrhythmic, a little atonal. Something that about that is relaxing to me. I like sitting in that space. But I think the official body is really well composed from start to finish. I think it starts strong with a lot of promise. I thought they were going to really lean into the danceable elements, some maybe new order elements of the genre, or maybe do something even a little more contemporary. But honestly, on the whole, it's like well composed stuff that seems to have nothing to say musically or otherwise. Yeah. It's so directly that stuff that it almost feels like they're a cover band in some way. It almost feels like they're just meaninglessly calling back to people who have written the same songs but with greater purpose. I like the album. I thought it was A-OK, but I just struggled to really generate anything interesting to say other than it sounds exactly like Orange Juice.
Yeah. Would you think that the songs are pretty similar to one another? Like if you hear one song, you've heard them all.
I think
that's one of the biggest issues that I feel like I've got with this thing.
Yeah, I think that's maybe I think that's a problem. Like I think Wild Child I think Asking for a Friend and Shave Your Head and My Dad's a Dancer are so similar that there were points where I thought that I had accidentally put this like the album on shuffle.
Yeah.
I also found there to be kind of some production issues. I think the Wild Child has some sort of synths that almost sound right. like...
In the chorus.
Yeah. They almost sound cheesy to the point of being like a parody.
Yeah. And that's like in the way through here listening to it, I'm like, oh, the Wild Child has got that dun, dun, bah, 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 bah. And so it's kind of like, okay, this is fine. But the more I listen to it, I'm like, man, if I even pull this track, I'm gonna be like, oh, this is so annoying. I can't even listen to it for more than a couple months at a time before I have to banish it completely. I think the guitar work on here is plucky and enjoyable in a lot of places, and the little riff they come up with for each song is usually pretty well made. But the issue there I have is that it never really deviates from that style the entire song. Like whatever the thing they're playing is, it's just on loop for the whole time.
Yeah.
Same goes with the bass playing here. And you mentioned the drum set, or I mentioned it rather. I think you maybe took some offense to that. But man, do you not get how like just sloppy and basic this drum set sounds? It's so loud. It's so distracting. I really don't care for it at all.
I almost had the opposite feeling where I felt like it was totally like you described some of the general musicality to be flat. I was kind of feeling that with the percussion. I felt it to be, you kind of want in a song like this or an album like this to have like a really driving beat. Like when we talked about Priest last year, which was our sort of early in the year post-punk thing from last year, they have a great percussionist and they sound sloppy in a way that feels like they're careening out of control, which is part of the appeal. I don't feel that way with this percussion. I feel like everything's pretty designed. Everything feels very compartmentalized.
Restrained.
Yeah.
And granted, you know, all of my criticisms, a fan of this group would probably say they're intentional, that it's meant to foster the sound. But again, comparing it to Priests from last year, there's so much energy and necessity in those lyrics and those messages. And even though when we talked about that at this point last year, I was maybe a little less enthusiastic about that album than you were.
Yeah.
But you look at the lyrics on a track like, what's the one? Pink White House. That's the one. Or Suck, or, you know, the classic JJ at this point. Like, there's a necessity and a danger to those lyrics that just is totally lacking here. I really don't care for the female-male vocalists on this thing. They're very, very flat. No real indications that they are interested more than just kind of talking their way through these songs. The male more than the female, I guess. And even then, the lyrics are not engaging. They're too vague. They're not pinned down to any specific idea. It's like it's too cool for the punk scene. I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty much a punk, post-punk thing, really. But the problem is, for me, as someone who, like, this is kind of my jam, generally, like, I have a similar but slightly different issue, which is they sound like they're doing an impression of other bands. Like, that sort of, we're just going to be sitting in a very neutral vocal space. I don't know. Something about it feels like an impression. Which I guess is fine. But I think the worst part of it is this is maybe the most weak in the knees album about consumerism that I've heard in a really long time, which is troubling for a band that's called Shopping.
Yeah.
That's their whole deal.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit from the opener, The Hype. So I think that little snippet does a great job of illustrating my issue with this album. It's like you put that on initially and you're thinking, hey, this is jammable. It's danceable. That guitar is doing some cool stuff. A little bit of call and response there with the vocalists. I like it. I'm intrigued. My issue is it stays in that spot and doesn't move for 30 minutes. It remains completely flat. And this album feels a whole lot longer than it actually is because of that. There's so little modulation in the sound or the lyrics or the stylings of anything, man. I think that drum fill that's in that clip I played is overbearing and simple.
Yeah.
And not super exciting. I love the sound of the guitar there. I think that's a lot of fun. But also that is kind of the whole album. Never really moves from that.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, I think that track is easily the most unique and accomplished track on the album. I mean, it's the only one that is within the style of the bass guitar is what's driving the song. The vocalists are put in the background. They make use of both versions of their vocal restraint. Like that track for me works on all cylinders. I was excited at the idea of listening to some well-composed classic feeling post-punk. And then after The Hype, every track following it, I have some issue with that puts me off, which again would be fine, but I think this is just a weak in the knees statement. Like none of these songs say anything. Like, there's no real need. Speaking of call and response, do me a favor and play Asking for a Friend real quick.
Okay. Anywhere in that track?
Just from the beginning. So here's the response. This is the first track from Orange Juice's first album that was released in 1982. Yeah. 1982.
That was 36 years ago, Mark.
It was a minute ago, Charlie. And what's funny is, because they sound almost identical to Orange Juice, it's given me a pretty easy way to critique their music, because what Orange Juice does with that sound is they use restraint to mask the feeling that is bubbling beneath all of the tracks. So while it on the surface sounds cool and collected, there's a sense of yearning, of feeling defeated and trying to overcome your own self. The things that you don't like about yourself, like those are all like implicit and explicit parts of that track. It's called Falling and Laughing. It's in the album. It's called You Can't Hide Your Love Forever. It's amazing. It even features on the album art two dolphins jumping out of the ocean, and it's like the color palette is identical to the Shopping album.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, I just don't understand why, as an artist, you would want to make the same version that sounds exactly like this other artist,
right?
Without anything backing it up. I just don't, I don't know. I wasn't really caught into this.
Did you find any moving lyrics on any of these tracks? I didn't bother to look it up because I was so disinterested, but was there any moment at all for you on this thing?
There's a certain amount of, you hear the generally like, wow, they're waiting for us to get excited. It's all part of this consumerist loop. And it's just so exactly what you expect to hear. And there's so little in terms of surprise or shock that it just kind of falls in the background for me. Like, I just kind of let it slide. I think the lyrics that demand the most attention on this are in Discover, which is the only moment on this album in which the song sounds different from the songs before and after it.
I noticed that too the first time.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a good song, but it's like clearly a goofy song.
Yeah. Let's play a little bit from Discover. Really synth heavy, really grungy.
Yeah. And there's some, I guess, somewhat pressing lyrics about feeling alone. And then the male from the female vocalist, and the male vocalist returns with, I'm not lonely, I'm fine. And just that's the whole
idea. Yeah, but I remember like rolling my eyes when I heard that. I was like, oh my God. Like, because they're so like, I don't know, disinterested in what they have to say. It's so restrained that they're like half asleep on these microphones. I'm not lonely. Fine. Okay, and like all the time is like just this dude, just like banging on the drums in the background, man. This thing was interminable for me. I could not get a full listen through this entire week, and it's 30 minutes long. That says a lot about how I feel about this thing, man. It's, and again, like, I don't think that it's like egregiously offensive music. I don't think that these guys are not talented. I think the guitar player and the bass player are really strong. Yeah. It's just the composition of the stylings and my own personal taste could not be more separate from one another. I could not engage with this stuff at all. I had no interest in what they had to say. I lost interest very quickly in their instrumentals. It was not for me. It was a bad week for
Charlie.
For the Shopping.
I mean, I said this already, but as someone who really finds their footing in this style of music, for me, it's like the problem of, I have all this better stuff to listen to that was written for a different reason. Like, you think about why post-punk came around. It was sort of the idea that like a lot of genres of music at that point in music history in the early 80s, throughout the late 80s, was a lot of really upfront, you know, there's like new wave. This is like Madonna era of pop, punk music. We're talking about Dead Kennedys. Like, everything's at 11 all the time. And so it made sense that there were some artists who were like,
reacting
reserved.
That.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like to write, to have interesting compositions that aren't based in just being in your face at all levels.
That makes sense. That's good music comes from reactions.
That's an interesting statement.
Yeah.
Good music comes from reactions.
Yeah. You're reacting against something. So you think like, oh man, I'm going to sound like these guys, but then it's like, no, wait, I'm not going to sound like them at all. I'm going to react against it. I'm going to rage against what's come before me and do my own thing because I'm an artist and I can do what I want.
Okay, so let's make a band. What kind of music are you going to write after listening to The Shopping?
I'm going to be as loud as possible. I'm going to bring an audience member up on stage every time. I'm going to look them directly in the eye the whole way I play my song and say, this is for you. Wow. Everything I'm going to sing right now is for you and you alone.
Yeah.
And we have a moment together. And this is important. You are special. 2018, the year of no bummers, baby. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4.
The love of the girl.
That's it. You got it. White Stripes. Nothing but the White Stripes.
Yeah. And
the White Stripes is kind of an interesting counterpoint to these guys. Being like, you know, turning the slop up, turning the noise up, and having way more fun than any of these guys up on stage.
Yeah, and I think also coming from a place of logic, too. Like,
yeah.
At least that's how Jack White's always struck me, is the sloppy, bluesy rock that he likes to write is
right.
Because he's thought a lot about it. You know, he's like a practice. He's
deconstructing composer. It and reassembling it.
Yeah. I need to understand the White Stripes. I have not listened to any White Stripes albums.
Really?
Yeah, never once.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah, they got some good ones. Here's what I'll say, too. Like, I listened to a lot of other stuff this week, both better and worse than this album. But almost everything else I listened to, I was more drawn to listen to because if it was good, I wanted to dig it apart and analyze it and figure out why it was so good. And if it was bad, I was interested in exploring what makes it so horrifically awful. And, man, do I have an album to talk about later on in the show that is horrifically awful.
Oh, yeah.
But I just, like I said, beating my head against the wall, trying to find some shred of conversation starter or like, yeah, I like that thing they do here a lot. Just nothing. Time and time again, coming up empty handed with these guys.
Yeah. All it generates in me is discussions about like genre history, which is a boring.
The other guys that did this first.
Yeah. That's a boring conversation.
Yeah.
I have one more thing I want to bring up and then I feel like I'm pretty tapped.
Same.
Which is the album art.
Okay.
So for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a photograph of a swimming pool. There's a sort of like blow up like pool alligator that's in the upper margins of the shot. So you see the sort of reflection, the shadow of the alligator beneath the pool. It almost gives it the impression that the crocodile is flying in the air. And I actually think that's okay. You know, that's fine enough for an indie, you know, punk band to have a shot like that. Here's what really bothers me about the album art is that in the bottom of the shot is the person holding their phone taking the shot.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a message there, but I don't like that. There's something about that that just, it just reinforces the idea that someone just walked up to a pool. Oh, this would be cool. Just took a picture of a pool toy with their phone. Does that bother you? Am I crazy?
That's the millennial world we're living in today, Mark. That's it.
Yeah.
It's giving the illusion of something that's there but isn't. And it's unable to disguise their uniquely human fallacies and
uniquely
qualities
human fallacies
that prevent them from achieving greatness.
If there's one thing this year has taught us, there are a lot of bad people who have trouble disguising their uniquely human fallacies.
No, that was last year. 2018, the year of no bummers, baby.
This is turning into the year of denial. The year of Charlie being
Shut up! Shut up! Don't talk about it!
Well, okay. There's a lot of great millennial art out there. This is not that for me.
Nope.
I think it's okay. Like, yep. To me, this is the equivalent of going to see an action movie that has, like, one good action scene in it. You leave and you feel like, well, that wasn't really worth the money, I don't think. But it was distracting. I like that part where he jumped off the car and landed in the other car. It was fine.
And at least it wasn't 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, it could have been shorter, but I had an okay time.
Right. My thoughts exactly. It's about as vanilla comes. I'm going to take one track off of this from my highlight reel, and that's going to be the hype.
It's got to be the
track. Hype. It's got to be the hype. That's the best track on this thing.
No question. And I think this band has, I think Shopping has potential Yeah. If they lean into the idea that they're writing dance music that is self or this referential of, you know, bands that have come past, if they really lean into this idea that, you know, sure, there's some message to our songs, but we're here to write some danceable bass tracks, I think they'll find greater success than just replicating bands that came before. So I'm going to take the hype as well. I'm also going to take Asking for a Friend. I really could have taken Shaved Head or Control or several other songs. Because
they all sound the same.
I think they actually, two of them share a riff that's almost identical. But I don't feel like figuring out which one that was.
So. It would take us half an hour to find it out because it's impossible to remember off the top of your head.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's the official body. And there it lies at our feet. That's Shopping. Let's take a quick break, Mark. When we come back, we'll talk about a little guy named Bruno Mars and his lady friend, Cardi B. So stay tuned.
Hey, quick question.
Yeah.
In Mario 64, whenever you choose a level, why does Mario sound completely different than he ever has before or since?
They're going to have to ask the source material there.
Bicycle. What's the word?
Who was that? Even Mario like does a double. What was that? Is that what I sound like?
Alrighty, we are back and ready to talk about Bruno Mars and Cardi B. Back at it again. Mark, I think this might be the only time this has happened where you unintentionally brought up a Billboard Hot 100 song the episode before we talked about it. You're like, oh, by the way, listen to some more Cardi B, and this one song with Bruno Mars is really bad, and what do you know? The Billboard has spoken, and that's what we're listening to this week.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad, but I don't think the song is bad. I think it is remixed strangely. Like, you'll probably get what I mean when we dig deeper in, but there is a difficulty fitting Cardi B into this very friendly and cleaned up Bruno Mars track.
Okay. Well, the song Finesse does come from 24 Karat Magic originally. This remix is the one that features Cardi B, and that's the one on the Billboard chart. So that's what we're going with. Just before we get into it, what do you think about this practice of we've seen it already twice this year with Ed Sheeran and Beyonce of remixing a song on an album with a more popular artist, interestingly in both cases, black and female, in order to get more radio play and more hits? Do you think that's the way of the future?
Isn't that what was happening already?
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
Like in a philosophical sense?
Like, what do you mean?
I'm just a witty philosopher making my witty comments. I just feel like oftentimes when I feel like you'll have like a top artist write a track, like let's say Lady Gaga, she'll write a track, and then you'll have an artist who is lesser, just sort of, but just as popular, write almost the same track. And it's just a series of the same track. Like, what's the lady who wrote the song about her mom that we used to complain about? And her big booty.
Are you talking about Iggy Azalea?
No. I can't for the life of me remember. Megan something?
Megan Trainor.
Like, you know, like that's like the second tier of pop music. Like someone goes and like a Nicki Minaj goes and writes a style of music that becomes popular, and then a Meghan Trainor says, "Oh, we'll write that song again for me." So I feel like this is just more of that, but more direct.
Yeah. Well, as the dust started to settle from his monstrous comeback, Bruno Mars returns for more heat with fellow chart topper Cardi B. The Bronx rapper drops bars woven between Bruno's crooning over a 90s style beat. On Instagram, Bruno revealed how the one and only Cardi's verse came to be and gave her some advice. I met Cardi B at 3 a.m. after my show in L.A. And there was a problem, so my webpage had to be reloaded, so let me read it again.
Wow, Bruno Mars should get a better internet provider.
I met Cardi B at 3 a.m. after my show in L.A. backstage where we recorded her verse for Finesse. She walked into the room and was everything I'd hoped she'd be. She never changed, Cardi. Don't let this crazy music business change who you are. You possess something that can't be taught. You're a true star. Thank you for putting your energy and love all over this record and video. So it debuted at the number 35 spot and then jumped up to number 3. Enough of that prelude, Mark. Let's get into the song. Here's Finesse. Drop top Porsche, rollie on my wrist, diamonds up and down my chain. Cardi B, straight stunning, can't tell me nothing. Bossed up and I changed the game. It's my big bronze boogie, got all them girls shook. My big fat ass got all them boys cooked. We're from dollar bills, now we popping rubber bands. Bruno sang to me while I do my money dance. Like, flexing on the ground like, okay.
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 Here's my argument. You have this song be all of the verses just be Cardi B, and this is a great remix.
So you're going to cut out Bruno Mars entirely?
No, have him do the chorus, but
oh, okay.
Keep her on the chorus too. Like, let her take total ownership of the track. Because this first part, like, there's no question Bruno Mars has great producers, you know, sort of in that Mark Ronson style. Like, this is a well-written track.
Very 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, cleaned up 90s, you know, like.
Sure.
Nothing in the 90s would sound like this.
Right. Right. It's our memory of the 90s come to life.
Yeah.
For music.
Yeah, exactly. But. Cardi B is an intense figure. Like, she brings with her a brutality, which I think is a huge part of her appeal. And Bruno Mars brings with him just the most poppy, relaxing, calming, no bad thoughts kind of music.
24-karat magic in the air.
Yes. So I think there's
a balance. Pick it, turn up, moon!
You okay? Are you okay?
Yeah. Cardi's jewelry is always decked out in diamonds, most notably her $60,000 necklace gifted to her by a fiancé Offset and her 8-carat $500,000 diamond engagement ring. But given that she had a net worth of around $4.5 million, she definitely doesn't have to rely on anyone to stay blinged out.
Wow. She doesn't have to rely on anyone.
Well, at the age of 19, Cardi B started working as a stripper in her hometown of the Bronx, but eventually became financially independent, curated a strong social media following, and then finally saw success in music with her hit, Bodak Yellow. Among other accolades, Cardi reached the number one spot on Billboard's Hot 100, and as of the song's release, had 4 top 15 songs, those being Bodak Yellow, Barty or Cardi, Motorsport, and No Limit. We've talked about 2 of those on the show. My Bronx Boogie could also be a reference to the 1985 song by hip-hop artist Man Parrish called Boogie Down Bronx, which is an ode to the influence the Bronx has had on the rise of hip-hop music.
Yep, this is a biography of Cardi B, written by geniuses. I think an interesting thing about Cardi B's career is that a lot of people like to talk about how social media is very important in the rise of a pop artist. But I feel like it's been disproportionately important for her as a pop artist. And we're seeing the effects of personal brands in a big way, like the implications of really brand building that can lead to some huge dividends in a way that I don't think any artist has exactly captured on this scale. Like, I think Lil Peep was also pretty huge for that. Tyler, the Creator, I think, used social media to really up his brand. But I feel like Cardi B just, like, built a thing through social media.
So you're saying she's got pop star potential.
That's pretty much
it. She's the next big thing. She's the next Britney Spears. She's the next NSYNC. She's the next Taylor Swift. Iconic.
I think I don't know. What do you think her crossover appeal is outside of rap?
I don't know. I could only think, you know, here's a powerful black female at the front. You know, we need more of those in society, and someone that's certainly going to be confrontational and enjoyable to those who like the drama, who like the sort of the idea of the melodrama behind the scenes. I think she brings some of that to the table. I think she's got high energy. She's entertaining. I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, I know like the dynamics of pop music are changing in some ways. It's like kind of an interesting war between the established, like, hey, we think this person can make us a lot of money. Let's have this process to have this person write albums and singles. And people who are sort of insisting that they also be part of that system, like Cardi B. I think she's coming in like a wrecking ball, Charlie.
So you're saying she's the next Miley Cyrus?
I'm saying she has wrecked me.
Okay. When a fan on Twitter asked what it means to drip in finesse, Bruno replied with, "If you don't know, I'm afraid you'll never know. Good luck, Kyle. I wish you all the best."
That's my favorite Notorious B.I.G. lyric.
When another fan of the thread claimed they drip in finesse, Bruno asked a favor from her with, "Then you must teach the world, sweet Delaney. Show them the powers of finesse and the joy it brings. Don't do it for me. Do it for the children." Let's keep it going. Finesse and getting paid. Ow. Ooh, don't we look good together? There's a reason why they watch all night long. All night long. Ooh. Yeah, I know we'll turn heads forever. So tonight I'm gonna show you off. When I'm walking with you, when I'm walking with you, I watch the whole room change. Baby, that's what you do. Baby, that's what you do. So you're upset because there's such a strong contrast between Bruno Mars, like his polished up persona and his clean cut appearance on these verses in the chorus, versus Cardi B's more aggressive, in your face verses.
Let's not say I'm upset.
Okay, but you feel the disconnect there, like something's not jiving with you.
Did you feel that for me when I said that earlier that I was upset?
I don't know. I'm trying to find the right word to talk about it, but that's, you don't like that. You don't like the difference in the stylings there.
Well, I think the thing is, you start the song off and it sounds like you started in the middle of the song, and Cardi B is just raging, which is exactly what she's good at. And I was thinking, sure, all right, she's bringing a level of grime to this track that's really going to change it. But from this moment on, that never happens again. It's just the Bruno Mars song. She does the verse and that's it. So she shows up later, but not with her own verse.
That's surprising.
Yes.
So you stick your guest verse at the very beginning,
and but then that's
keep
just it.
The rest of the song exactly the same. But yeah, that's kind of upsetting. I feel like if you're going to do a feature, you give them the spotlight at some point.
Yeah, she just shows up. She begins the track, like I said, as if it's in the middle. She's really intense. And then the song is just its usual clean, you know, anybody can listen to this on the radio self, which is just at odds. Like, it's just a weird way. It's a weird way to compose the remix.
Yeah. There are almost no annotations for the rest of the song aside from Cardi B's verses, which is interesting.
Right.
There's nothing else worth talking about in this whole song.
Well, it's the only interesting thing about the remix is the first 30 seconds of it.
I don't know. I think Bruno Mars is, he's the kind of guy that I could see myself enjoying. I have not been a fan of his nostalgia-based turn into the Uptown Funk, 24 Karat Magic, that whole scene I'm not as crazy about. Right. I like Locked Out of Heaven. I think that's a super jam. But other than that, I'm sort of flat on him. But I think he's got a solid voice. I think he's a big entertainer. I think he is trying to evoke the same sort of energy that Michael Jackson put out when he was at the height of his powers. He's very much seeking to be that kind of entertainer, someone that can dance and sing and put on a whole show himself.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that that's an influence, but I think the difference between Bruno Mars and Michael Jackson is Bruno Mars overperforms basically everything he sings. It's just a lot of really pretty... like I always come back to voice contestant as a comparison, but there's just always this need to just show off your whole vocal range for every beat, regardless of the emotional context. And on top of that, he doesn't have an aesthetic all his own. He just kind of bounces between, you know, pop singles. Like, you get a real sense that Michael Jackson was spearheading a ship, that he was pushing a genre in a certain direction. Whereas this feels like a series of pre-planned, like, pop gambits. Like, 80s nostalgia was already well established whenever 24 Karat Magic came out.
Yeah.
Or whatever, 24 Karat, whatever it's called. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Do you agree? Do you agree with about the vocals? Do you like Bruno Mars more than I do?
Yeah, like is a strong word. I think I can appreciate him, but I don't necessarily turn to him for my pop fix.
Do you turn to him in times of despair when you're sad and you need a pick-me-up?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you journal about him?
I would love to, if he would have my name.
Are you proposing to him?
It don't make no sense, Mark.
No, it don't.
In the original Finesse, these lyrics were about how good Bruno and the girl he was with looked together, but Cardi rapping them here changes their meaning to be about fame and success. This is evident in the fact that Cardi gave the original song an 8,832% boost on Genius. During the making of the original song, I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you. During the making of the original song, Bruno was frustrated, particularly with the bridge. In a 2016 interview with Rolling Stone, he said, "I don't know what's not hitting home. It's just something weird that I'm not messing with yet." He jabs at the keyboard in frustration. "I just have to open it up." Cardi may be the something weird he was looking for. When a fan on Twitter asked what it means to drip and finesse, well, we already heard that part, so I'm not going to read it again.
It's kind of interesting synth part there in this track.
Yeah, again, very referential of that 90s scene, right? It's kind of cloudy and dreamy in a way like a Montel Jordan song might be. That percussive beat, that's a very 90s R&B thing, right?
But like in the cloud of your memory.
Exactly, yeah. It's way cleaner, way more polished, but
it's also way more active. It's way louder and more active. Like, I would, if you go back and listen to any 90s pop song from any artist, none of them sound like this. Like, this doesn't sound anything like 90s pop to me. Like, literally speaking, it just has the cultural touchstones of 90s pop instrumentation. And so we assign it that.
So with the comes to nostalgia, are we always just 20 years behind the curve?
Well, there's that classic idea that in grocery stores, they play the radio hits from 20 years prior because those are the new parents who spend the most money.
Mm.
So, yes.
Okay. So here we are. The year is 98. Welcome.
In 5 years, they're going to be playing My Chemical Romance songs at the
Perfect. I guess he's got to start having some kids.
Let's get to it. You and me right now.
Yes. Pizza baby. Man, I think that pre-chorus is okay. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's okay too. I think 24 Karat Magic is Bruno Mars' best album.
Have you listened to the whole thing?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't realize you were such a big fan of his.
I'm not.
It just happened to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah. You know, there's just infinite time and infinite stuff. We live in an age where you can just do that with
You got infinite content out there to consume. So time to get busy.
What do you think the time limit on us making infinite content references is? When is it going to stop?
A little side detour here. Did you hear that Shaggy is coming back with a new album?
No.
He's collaborating with Sting of the Police.
Hmm.
And the two of them are going to drop a collaborative album that will be out on April the 20th.
Wow.
So, in case you were curious as to what's going to go down then.
I've been wondering about Sting, how he's doing.
Yeah, he's currently hard at work with our main man, Shaggy, who has also not been relevant since 98.
Sting is always relevant.
Just get some Nintendo Labos, man. We'll pop on some Shaggy and some Sting, and we'll just have a 2018 kind of day. Should we live podcast that day?
Yeah, that would be great.
I haven't gotten your thoughts on Nintendo Labo yet. What are you thinking about this?
I still don't think I've understood what it
You don't
does.
Understand. You and the rest of the entire world.
It just seems so
including
confusing.
Nintendo.
It's like
there's cardboard? This stuff. I don't know. You figure it out. You build it.
What is it? It's just cardboard?
It's cardboard with little games inside it. So you can fish stuff or be a robot or you can play a piano.
Can I do them all at once?
No, because you have to build the dang things.
Well, if I buy a lot of Labas, I want to be a robot who goes fishing and listens Robo to piano. Labo sounds too much like labia for my taste.
Yeah, so you got to go with the short A or not the long A.
Labo.
You labo? It's like you're calling someone lame, but you've got a cold. Labo. Yeah.
I got to go to the gynecologist about a Nintendo Labo problem I've been having.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be able to help you out. That's right. It is surprising how little Cardi B is in this song.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Just slap her name on it to get a little feature at the beginning, but ultimately it's still that Bruno Mars song.
Also, think back to that verse. Like, think back to what she was doing in that verse. Just she was almost atonal. Like, she's not in sync with the song at all. She is within the rhythm, but not within the range, the vocal range.
Right,
she's just attacking it, and then it just goes into a Bruno Mars song.
I don't know. What do you guys want to hear?
Dripping in finesse is not fun.
I do like that little bit of a triangle that's in there. That that's very 90s.
Is the triangle your favorite instrument? Instrument?
My instrument? Yeah. Yeah, it's triangle, then it's oboe, then it's bongos, then it's the marimba, and then it's the voice. The show, the voice, not like the actual voice. And then it is no more.
Oh, that's the only instruments you like. Can I give you my list?
Yeah, go ahead.
I like the sitar. I like the accordion. Yes. I like that one instrument that went viral where a man had to blow into a what looked like a keytar and then a very loud noise came out. I like the vuvuzela. That is all.
Yeah. Okay. Good list. We agree on it.
I hate the human voice.
And the show.
I love the voice. I just don't like... I skip where they sing. I just watch the voices skip all the singing parts.
That would be fascinating to watch. Just this compelling human drama where you're not sure why everyone loves these people.
Yeah. It's just like you see someone dramatically walk onto a stage and then it fades to black, it comes back, and everyone is just standing.
Crying. Clapping their hands. You are amazing. You are a treasure.
They do this thing on The Voice where they have like the hosts like have little rivalries, and they have mini like docudramas where like they'll have confessionals of Blake Shelton being like, well, you know, Adam certainly tries to be cool, but one thing he won't tell you, he's actually a huge dork. And then it'll like cut to Adam. They'll be like,
he's actually
yeah,
a real sweetheart.
I like video games. I'm a dork. I have a fun time playing video games. Miley Cyrus beat me the other day and it made me mad. And then it'll like cut to Miles. And she's like, he's a dork. And everyone's losing their goddamn minds. Like, at the, when they play those clips, like,
celebrities are people,
people
too, Mark.
Yeah.
We're just true. Like celebrities. We are celebrities.
You and I are celebrities. Podcast celebrities.
I thought you were going to be like Blake Shelton comes up. He says, you know, that Adam, he likes his video games, but deep down, he's just a real sweet lover. And we love each other. It's very tender.
When that Adam comes to my door at 12
he puts
a.m.
his hands on me. I just want to write a song about him. People think the song's about a girl, but actually, no, it's about Adam, who's a good friend of mine. I love him dearly.
People think she thinks my tractor's sexy is about tractor, but the tractor is Adam Levine.
It's interesting how much she gets swallowed up by the song there.
Yeah.
You know, like she's there, but man.
She doesn't sound anything like, she doesn't fit within the production at all.
No. I'm thinking back to that Jeezy track we talked about a couple weeks ago where, you know, she was a jolt of energy into a very flat and boring track.
Yeah.
And she's like, nothing's really changed here. She's still doing her thing, but this track has so much pulsating sugary energy inside of it that she almost comes across as feeling flatter because of that. She can't sure. stand out inside of this song.
I almost feel the opposite. I feel like the song is pretty, you know, by the numbers, and you might like it. Like, I like it. You like it. You love it. You love Bruno Mars. So you
no,
love this.
I don't.
And
don't put words in my mouth, Mark.
I'll put whatever I want in your mouth.
Oh, no. 2018, the year of no bummers.
Yeah. So, that's all I lost my train of thought. Oh, no. So, okay, Bruno Mars, you might like it, but you know where it's going at every moment. You know exactly what Bruno Mars is going to do every time. Like, it's the pop predictability. But with Cardi B, you have no idea what she's going to do. She doesn't sound like she fits. She's this weird, like, shadow in the gleaming pop, like, landscape that is this song. So she's the only thing that I take interest in the remix. So for me, listening to it, the song is weird and off-key and kind of interesting, but not very, really well composed for about 30 seconds, and then it's a boring pop song. Yeah, I like Cardi B's verse because it makes the song crazy.
It's crazy to me that this is only his third album.
Is it?
Unless you count the Mark Ronson collaboration.
I do.
Yeah.
I didn't listen.
But on a Spotify playlist, he only has three under his name.
Sorry. You're right. 24 Karat Magic is not that Mark Ronson album.
No, that's Uptown Sound, Freetown Sound.
Whatever. I never listened to 24 Karat.
No, that's
Magic.
Blood Orange. What am I talking about?
It's the White Album, I think.
Yeah.
It's called
Abbey Road, I think it's called.
Nevermind.
Oh, yeah, with the baby on the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's right. With the baby Bruno Mars chasing a dollar bill naked.
No, it's Uptown Special.
Okay. Well, that's what I listened to. I lied.
Although he's only on one track on that whole thing. It's just Uptown Funk.
Is that true? I thought he was on a couple.
I only see his name on one track here.
It's been years. Charlie, yeah. I don't remember.
Stevie Wonder is on here twice, and he's not. Kevin Parker is on here twice. Three times, that is. I don't know. We got to finish this song. We got to push through. pushing. It'll make no sense. You know, dripping in finesse with my baby. 7 seconds to go, Mark.
Okay, there's something compelling about this to me. That I don't think the song is good, but there's this idea in my head that Cardi B is an outsider to a system that Bruno Mars is at the very top of, and that they all now have to kind of reckon with Cardi B's presence because she is dominating. So this, she's going to be featured in a lot more stuff, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Imagine a Taylor Swift Cardi B combo. Imagine an Ed Sheeran Cardi B combo. Ugh.
I'm still reacting to the Taylor Swift combo. Because I'm thinking of that Taylor Swift Future collaboration, and that thing is one of the worst songs of the year last year. So,
sure.
I can just imagine the terrors that await.
But it's a fascinating terror. It's like she's I was going to say she's the Donald Trump of pop music, but that's a loaded comment.
Yeah, no. There's a lot of associations tied to that.
Yeah, for sure. Also, she did build up a fortune all on her own, so she's very different.
Right. No help from daddy there.
Yeah.
I would rather we get a year where every artist has to collaborate with Cupcake, and she just drops like filthy lyrics on every pop song so they can't play it on the radio anymore.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Mountain Goats Cupcake combo.
Duck, 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 goose.
Just the Mountain Goats like huddled in a corner in fear.
This is a song about a Mexican wrestler. Can you please not say anything offensive?
A Mexican wrestler whose dick I suck? Okay. Look, we can do that. We can make it about that.
That's the name of the album.
That's a good album title.
Same album cover as the previous one they did.
I love that.
7 seconds to go.
Oh.
Well, that was quick.
Yeah, that was quick.
They're out of there in a minute.
Goodbye.
They'll overstay their welcome.
Oh, wow. I don't feel bad about taking this on the 2017 list.
That's what I'm thinking too. Yeah. Yeah, it's 2017. So I think I'll throw it on there for me as well. It's decent enough. Cardi B is pretty good here, and the Bruno Mars pre-chorus I like quite a bit.
Yeah.
It sounds different than the Uptown Funk stuff he's been doing recently.
Definitely. And, you know, I talked a lot about it. I think there's a lot of logical reasons. Like, there's a lot of composition reasons why the track is not good. But, like, it's interesting. So, I don't know. I can appreciate it for that.
Well, take it. Take two. That's Finesse, the remix featuring Cardi B by Bruno Mars. Cool. All right. Well, whose turn is it to go first this week on What They Listen To, Mark? Is it you or me?
It doesn't matter to me. You go. You were right. Excited to go, so you go.
Okay, let's start with, I think I got three big albums to talk about this week. One good, one bad, and one medium. So you pick.
You know what? I want to start with the medium. I want to, like, get into the, save the best for last.
Okay, sounds good. The medium is the next album from Porches, The House. Porches is a group that has generated a fair bit of indie cred over the past few years. They were most recently on the scene back in 2016 with their album Pool, and didn't necessarily love it that much, but I think the song Be Apart is super, super good, and was maybe intrigued to check out some other stuff from them. This album, The House, is, I think, inconsistent is the best word of describing it. The track listing is bizarre. It goes wildly back and forth between interlude-like tracks and full songs. The styles can change pretty quickly. There are some gorgeous tracks on here, and there are some bizarre songs written in, like, a Swedish or Norwegian or something. It's an intriguing listen, one that I went back to more this week than the Shopping album because I was trying to find something that I thought maybe was there. And ultimately, I think it's maybe more inconsistent than that Shopping album, but I like certain parts of it much more. I'll play a little bit from a song I like a lot called Now the Water on that album. The album art for this thing is brutal. It's really bad. It's just his mopey face looking down at the styrofoam cup.
I'm looking at it now.
It's real ripe. But yeah, I just found it to be kind of inconsistent more than anything else. If you're into porches, you'll probably like some parts of this thing. But I wasn't super drawn to it to stay with it for much more than probably this week.
Okay. I thought Pool, the last album, was a little overrated.
Yeah, me too. I like I said, I like Be Apart a whole lot, but other than that, I could kind of take and leave that whole album.
Right.
Good stuff. Mark, I saw Phantom Thread, the final film with Daniel Day-Lewis, and oh boy, that's a good film right there.
Yeah.
That's that P.T. Anderson sure knows what he's doing when it comes to movie making. I think you and I were maybe both a little bit underexcited, a little disappointed by the Inherent Vice that we saw a couple years ago. This is, I think, a return to form for him. It's just rich with costumes and elaborate
costumes.
Set design. I love it. I love a good dress. Daniel Day-Lewis is just a treat to watch. It goes to some surprising places. I was shocked at where this film ends up by the end. It is... quite good. Highly recommend it. One of my best of the year. Along with it, of course, comes the next big Johnny Greenwood score. And Mark, this thing is truly gorgeous. This thing is cloaking the entire film. And I just want to play a little bit from this thing for you. The main theme, the Phantom Thread theme, is truly impressive. I'm going to play the second movement of the theme because it's, I think, the one that I think of first when I think of this theme. Goes on from there, but that's the kind of the main motif that encapsulates this film. I think it's impressive, classical feeling, and the way they shift and change it throughout. Here is the third portion, a big dramatic climactic moment in the film. So now I've got a whole orchestra of strings. Those timpani hits on each of the beats, I think, adds more drama to it. And at the very end, I think it's amazing. It's so good, man. Oh, the way it pairs with the visuals inside of that film, it's just a delight. It's so good.
That sounds cool.
One last little bit from that. It's Alma's theme, who's the main lead female. Greenwood plays with that classical sound throughout the film and also uses a lot of harsh droning and feedback in places that's really disconcerting. It's the sort of thing where It's this this relationship that's very formal, very classical. You know, it's 1950s in England, but there's something underneath the surface that's not being discussed or talked about. And you see little creaks of it bubble up every now and then. And the way that drama unfolds over the course of the 2 hours here, it's really something special. I think it's a film that it's impressive on a first viewing, but the more you think about it, the more you sit with it, the more intricate and impressive it comes, and certainly something that's worth a lot of discussion in the aftermath.
Wow.
Highly recommend it. Phantom Thread, check it out. Last one I got for you is the absolute worst album I think I've heard so far this year. It's Mania, Mark. It's Fall Out Boy.
You listen to a Fall Out Boy album?
I had to listen to it because I had to hear just how bad this thing ends up being.
How bad is it?
There was a time, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, when Fall Out Boy was good. Is that right?
I disagree.
They were never good?
I think they wrote a few okay tracks, but I think they're always pretty right.
Okay. They have just been completely desperate for any kind of identity in the wake of their return, ever since they lit them up back in 2012 or whatever it was at this point. Here they are, three albums into their return, seemingly as lost as ever, just getting louder and stupider along the way. This was supposed to come out last year, but it was delayed. Apparently, there has been a lot of backlash to some of the singles in the lead-ups. They dropped it in January, hoping people would forget about it. But not me, Mark. Not me. Let's play a little bit from Young and Menace. So they are leaning hard into that dubstep, similarly to Imagine Dragons. Just can't give it up.
That's
something, isn't it?
That sounds terrible.
Here's Champion in their long line of writing songs for sports montages on commercials and television. They got another one. It's called Champion. This was co-written with Sia. Oh. Yeah. Come on. If I can live through this, Mark, I can do anything.
Is Pete Wentz still in the band?
Yeah, she sure is. We got some bad stuff. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a crush on a girl in high school who thought Pete Wentz was the ideal male body.
Yeah, I think most middle school girls go through that phase.
Mm-hmm.
We got terrible songs on here about church and women, where they bring in an entire choir. You guessed it. They've got a lyric that says, "I'm about to go Tanya Harding on the whole world's knee," which I thought was pretty offensive, but timely considering the release of I, Tanya.
Wait, what does that mean?
I'm going to break the entire world's kneecap with a bat.
Why?
Because I'm mad, Mark.
Football players kneel?
What?
Is it because football players kneel, or are they saying, like, I'll break your knee if you kneel? Is that the idea?
No. Do you know what the Tanya Harding is?
This figure. No, I understand that. I understand that, but breaking the world's knee.
Yeah.
Is that just a Tanya reference?
I think it's just the Tanya reference. I don't think it has to do anything about people's knees. I think it's just a clunky, poor written metaphor.
Clunky porn metaphor.
Poorly written metaphor.
Almost porns are poorly written, Charlie. That's no surprise.
That's true. Let's play a little bit from the closest thing to their old sound on here, Last of the Real Ones. and then I found you. You are the sun, and I am just the planets spinning. It's so produced. It's so over the top. It's so desperate for plays and listens and maintaining youth. Mania. That's the name of the album. Mania.
I was going to like give that a listen. It was like, oh, it was a big disaster. It would be interesting to hear what happened. But having heard these clips...
It's a disaster, all right. Out.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I got. You're up.
My turn. I don't really have much. I listened to Regulate the G-Funk Era by Warren G.
Who's that?
Sorry?
Who is that?
Warren G?
Yeah.
Here, let me play you Regulate, which will and is and always will be a classic.
Property, we're damn good too, but you can't be any geek off the street. Got me?
Is this not ringing a bell yet?
Sure isn't.
Really? All right, that's surprising. I'm gonna keep playing it.
Handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Regulators, mount up. It was a clear black night, a clear white moon. Warren G was on the streets trying to consume some skirts for the E. So I could get some phones rolling in my ride, chilling all alone.
Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G.
You never heard that?
Never heard that before, but it sounds
That's
rad.
That's crazy. No, Regulate is like classic. You got to listen to Regulate.
I guess I do.
I'd never listened to the album Regulate the G-Funk Era. It's kind of a missed spot in my trying to listen to every 90s rap thing that existed.
Ever.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I didn't love this album. I thought the album generally was more subdued, a little more thoughtful, sometimes more interesting intellectually than a lot of the R&B hip-hop stuff that was happening in that exact sect of West Coast rap. Like, obviously, Regulate is amazing. Regulate is the best. But a lot of the songs that follow Regulate, which is the title track and the opening track, are pretty subdued. So here's So Many Ways to give you an example of what I mean.
So there it is, as I go about my days, I can only bring it to you like this, in so many ways.
Form is on, but minded, can I take them from your friend? You should have illegal, so should have illegal, so was up.
This track sounds a whole lot like a Funkified track, which is way more intense and a little more brutal, a little bit better maybe.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting. Like, there is a question in that original Gangstas by Ben Westhoff, which I read a couple weeks ago, of like, why didn't Warren G blow up? Like, he was poised to blow up, but his career started late and ended very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the reason is that like there was a ton of artists operating in G-Funk at the time. And he was just slower. He was just quieter. And on top of that, I think he needed more than one obvious hit on the debut to really kick things off. But that said, Regulate is still amazing. I love Regulate. You should listen to Regulate.
Yeah, that sounds sweet. I liked it.
It was sweet. Sweet like cherry pie.
Cool.
This is from a couple weeks ago, but I listened to Highly Evolved by The Vines.
Okay.
Which I never listened to. It's one of those albums where, you know, from the era where everything was the Blanks, the Strokes, the Hives, the Vines, the Libertines, the AAs, you know, and so on and so on. Some people count the Vines as like one of the classic ones. And there's a certain amount of rock legend around the vocalist and songwriter who had a lot of... It had some mental health issues that were undiagnosed that made him do some crazy things. He made it, the Vines made an appearance on Dave Letterman, in which he just started freaking out on live television. Dave Letterman had to ask if he was okay.
Great.
And then after that, he was asked about, like, he was like throwing things and then like left the building and started like kicking trash cans on the street.
Oh, geez.
So he was asked after that, hey, why did you freak out on your first big live TV thing? And his answer was, well, I was looking outside and the buildings are just so tall and I'm just not used to seeing buildings like that from where I'm from. And that was just his like answer to
like, I'm moving on. We're not going to talk about it anymore.
Right. I think it was okay. I don't have a ton to say about it. I think there's one really good track. They sound like pretty much everybody else. It's on that thin line between, is this a familiar thing and also a classic or just familiar? But I ended up liking the track Homesick a lot. Here's a touch of that. Pretty Radiohead track, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, I liked it, but I don't maybe caught into the idea that it's this like rock classic.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing is, I brought this up briefly a couple weeks ago, and I kind of wanted to talk to you about it. First impressions of Earth by the Strokes,
album number three,
the third album. I had never listened to it before. I don't think I'd even listened to the lead singles. Before
it tends to get brushed under the rug. You've got like the first two, which are obviously super important, and the later two, which are more recent and more in the popular consciousness, but that third one tends to be overlooked, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I wasn't honestly a huge fan of it. I felt it was lacking something, some sense of direction. Like, they're all definitely Stroke songs. You Only Live Once is like decent Stroke single, but I feel like this is the album where they start coasting. Like, it just feels so, it's like the Japan Droids thing. Like, when I listened to that Japan Droids album from last year, I was just like, oh, okay, this does sound like that, but it's got none of that urgency that was so important to the band. I feel like right. This is the moment where that happens.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll play a clip of, You Only Live Once. Even kind of sing-songy there with the right. Vocals.
I think it's tough because they're looking to kind of change and evolve their sound while still doing that thing that they love and the people loved, and it's tough to modulate that sound because it's so singular. So I right. think, you know, when Angles comes around, it's a major change to their sound, and I think some people dislike that, but I think Angles is pretty fun on the whole, and there's a lot of good moments there. Certainly very different sounding than that stuff.
Well, I'm talking about First Impressions of Earth. Are you saying I should move on to Angles and check that out as well?
Well, I mean, I know when you listened to it a while ago, we talked and you said you were not impressed by it. I think with First Impressions, they're still hanging out in that same zone as the previous two, unsure of where to take their sound next. It's like they're still kind of riffing on the motifs that made the first two albums so popular and important. But to evolve your sound from that is also to change that sound because it's so singular. And right. so Angles is really all over the place stylistically. And I think some of it works and some of it doesn't, but it's really engaging as a listen to me. I enjoy that the whole way through.
Hmm. I feel like I've just, now that I've listened to the first three in such a short span, like I'm almost obligated to fulfill, like to yeah. complete the trilogy. So
keep it going.
And, like,
and get Come Down Machine in there too, man.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's like a certain kind of conversation to be had about like, well, we talked about this with the Shins last year, where I don't think either of us felt that Heartworms was a revolutionary
a knockout
Yeah. So, knockout. It was definitely not a knockout, but it was definitely a grand slam and then some. I'll tell you that much.
Grand slam, mamma jamma.
But it's the kind of question of there is obviously less urgency to this music. There's less of a need for it to exist. There's less need for the artist to prove themselves. They're just writing. They're just skilled at what they do, and they're just writing for the sake of writing music or because it's their job. And how much of that lack of energy bugs you when you listen to it, I think, is like a pretty major question.
Yeah.
I think with First Impressions of Earth, I have additional problems on top of that, which are that I think just the, honestly, Albert Hammond Jr.'s guitar work is just less good. Like, mm-hmm. this, I don't think there's any signature hook in any song on that album. I think the highest highs that the singles reach on the album are like, after those first two Strokes albums and then like a ton of other bands who just did the Strokes thing, like it's so below par. It's yeah. so predictable and slow and not there. And I think at that point, Julian Casablancas is just kind of banking it. Like, I don't think he's really like present for it. Mm-hmm. Just the vocals are just so flat.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why someone would listen to this and go, well, there's still more of that though. Like there are still the Strokes. Like, I wouldn't say they're so below at such a level that it's awful music. I just think there's nothing to latch on to. But they're still the Strokes. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel that.
That's it for me, though. That's all I listen to.
All right. Cool. Good talk. Let's talk about next week on the show, then.
Oh, wait.
Oh.
Sorry. Stop for a second. Okay. Stop the clock.
Stopping.
I talked a lot of mess about Ryan Adams last week.
Yeah.
I just want to give one of his tracks its due. Because I stumbled upon Rock and Roll, recorded in 2003, or released in 2003, I should say. The lead track off that album is called This Is It. This is a period that I have learned from that book, Meet Me in the Bathroom, that Ryan Adams is on a lot of hard drugs. He has gone beyond the party drugs. He's gone into a deep place where he is sometimes running nude through the streets of Brooklyn, singing Frère Jacques in the middle of the night, which is a real story. So imagine this man, and he's also an extreme narcissist. So imagine the mental state of this guy, and then listen to This Is It, because it is a mind blower.
That's pretty good.
Unbelievably good.
Wow.
Yeah, I listened to that song like 30 times this week. Every time I listen to it, I'm like, I can't believe how good that is.
Every time you go out to go accomplish a goal, you just throw that on and be like,
seriously,
hyping yourself up, getting all motivated and whatnot. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got to go to the gym and listen to This Is It on loop. Holy moly, that's so good.
You get major gains.
Yeah, like that feels so essential. And like knowing that at that point he is like just on the edge, like he's totally just on the fringes of his own mind and just letting that loose.
Yep.
That is such that's where a the good magic rock comes. Track. Whew.
Cool.
All right, that's it for me now. Sorry.
All right, let's talk next week. Market's a big one because Migos dropped Culture 2 this week.
Really?
Yep. And guess
all
what?
All right. What?
It is 106 minutes long.
Oh, my God.
They got a lot to say, Mark. They've been away for about a year, and they've got a lot to say.
That's long.
I guess their producer said, after Bad and Bougie, you can do whatever you want. And they said, all right, let's do it.
That's really long.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really long. But it's okay, Mark, because guess what? We're not listening to it. At least I'm not, because I'm listening to Mimicking Birds, baby. Layers of Us. Oh. It's out on Glacial Pace. I listened to it a couple times. And oh boy, can't wait to talk to you about it next time on the show.
Because you hate it?
Because I hate it.
I think it's bad.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's go to the Billboard. This week at number one, it's Havana. Then it's Perfect. Just the Ed Sheeran song. It's interesting. It's just the Ed Sheeran song. So according to our rules, I think we're supposed to talk about Perfect by Ed Sheeran next week, because this is not the same song as the one that Beyonce featured on. But if it's okay with you, I'm going to propose that we move forward, considering we've already discussed that song at length.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. That's kind of interesting, though. That's
a little
funny
loophole in the system. Song 3 is Rockstar with Post Malone. Song 4 is Finesse. And song 5 is a little girl named Halsey, and her song is called Bad at Love.
Oh, that's too bad for her.
Yeah. Halsey got a lot of attention for that Women's March poem that she wrote. You see that?
No, I didn't.
She was blowing up the social media feeds, Mark, with that moving poem about... I don't even know what it's about because I haven't read it, but I've seen it everywhere.
You're sitting here lecturing me about a thing you don't even know.
Nope, but I know it's a thing, so check it out.
Terrible.
All right, anything else for the people?
If you'd like to buy a pizza holder, I am selling them at a discounted price of $600 a piece. Please come to my house. You can find me by Googling my name and then Pizza with a Plan and the man with the plan for the pizza plan .net.
That's good. I like it. You're going to get a lot of business that way. Really easy to find. Really easy to Google.
If I sell a single pizza holder, I will be at a deficit of $6,000.
You can only go up from here. 2018, the year of no bummers.
Yes.
All right. We'll see you next week for Mimicking Birds and Halsey. In the meantime, find us on social media. Share the love elsewhere. Dig us up. Drop us a review. 5 stars if you don't mind. We sure do appreciate it. Until next time, play that outro music.